Next.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guests today on Keeping the Faith are two folks from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, Shaquille Mustafa and Fatima Hermes. We were just saying Hermes is a Greek name, but you're not Greek, no. Fatima. What is your ethnic background?
I'm originally from Egypt. Uh-huh. I grew up here, and I was born and I was raised here in America.
Were you born here? Or
yeah.
Born here.
Not in Champaign, Urbana.
Where?
In Oregon, Corvallis, Oregon.
Ah. Yeah. And what were your parents doing in Corvallis?
Yeah, it was like a campus setting, just like here. There were students there.
Sure.
They met and married there, and then they had me and my sister there.
Ah, great. And how did you end up in Champaign-Urbana?
Well, I'm a student here. I'm a graduate student on campus here. I had friends who came here, and they said it's a great university, and I agree now that I'm here.
Where
they recommended that I apply, so.
Where were you, an undergrad?
I was an undergrad in Cairo, Egypt, at a university called the American University in Cairo, AUC, for short, AUC.
So you grew up, went to high school in Corvallis still, or did your folks go back to Egypt?
No, they actually went back to Saudi Arabia.
Oh.
Yeah, and so I went to high school there, and then went to college in Egypt, and then came back here for grad school.
Very good. And what's your background, Shaquille?
I'm actually a software engineer. I'm employed with a local telecom company, and I've been in Champaign-Urbana for about 6 years now.
Where did you study engineering?
I studied computer science, actually, in University of South Carolina in Columbia. And so I spent a lot of time down south, and I grew up in the Midwest in Detroit.
And what's your background?
My family's from Bangladesh, the country of Bangladesh.
Oh.
And they immigrated here and brought us along with them.
How old were you when you came to this country?
I was quite young. I was under the age of 10. And before that, we lived in Australia. So most of my life has been abroad.
And so when you came here, you were speaking English with an Australian accent?
No, I don't think I was.
Well, I grew up in Urbana, so I'm a very local product. I've had the good fortune to be able to travel some, but I was born in Urbana and went to high school and college in the Midwest and then seminary in Chicago, and then my doctorate was from down in the south, in the southeast at Duke. So I visited the Carolinas where you went to school. Well, let's talk a little bit about you two are fasting, and you're fasting because of Ramadan. You're both Muslims. Were your families both followers of Islam?
Yes. Both of my parents were born into the Muslim faith. And so from a very early age, you know, they taught us the pillars of the religion, and one of which, of course, we're discussing today is fasting.
And mine too. Mine were from, you know, Muslim background.
And when you were growing up, did you keep Ramadan? Did you fast during Ramadan when you were children? I know children are often they're not forced to. Some children choose to. What did you do?
Well, you're required to fast once you become an adult, so that varies for different people.
Sure.
And also, it's kind of tricky. You can't just start all of a sudden practicing something that is difficult or that you haven't been doing for a while. So, what most kids do is that they start fasting parts of the day, and they get really excited about that, and the parents encourage them to do that. I think I started fasting at Ramadan actually in total when I was about 12, when we just moved back from here to Saudi Arabia. That was my first ever Ramadan.
And what about when you were in this country, Shaquille, was it easy? Well, tell me about your childhood experience. Did you fast at all as a child, or is that just an adult thing for you?
I think it was similar to Fatima's experience. As a child, we learned to fast, and it's something that we want to do. I mean, I think I can speak for most Muslim children when they want to emulate their parents and adults, and so sort of, you know, you feel left out when you're not fasting, so you're kind of anxious to, you know, start the fasting ritual. So, but I don't recall exactly when it was that I started fasting, but I think it was something that I kind of eased into, similar to what Fatima has went through.
Now, I know different Muslim families vary in the how observant they are, just like Christians and Jews and others. Were your families particularly strict?
My family wasn't particularly strict. They were, I mean, they, I guess it was kind of an evolutionary process for them as well, because my parents weren't always as religious as they are now. They kind of, you know, learned as they grew older. And so we kind of learned with them. And so initially when they introduced, you know, the Muslim prayer, you know, we pray five times a day.
Yes.
And fasting and the different pillars of Islam, they, you know, basically taught us the technicalities of how, you know, you go about those sorts of things. But, you know, as we grew older, you know, they tried to teach us, they actually took us to the mosque and tried to teach us the meaning behind those sorts of things.
Now, when you were in college as an undergraduate at University of South Carolina, was there a mosque there?
Yeah, there was a mosque not too far from campus. Oh. Yeah, right off campus.
Was it, had it been there very long?
It was, for, I think we moved to South Carolina in 89, and there was a mosque there. It was a very small mosque, and then later on they expanded it into a much larger facility, and since then the Muslim population has really started soaring, so I think the mosque as it stands now is not really big enough to accommodate all the Muslims. So there's other Islamic centers and facilities. There's also Islamic school there, so the community there is very much growing very fast.
Is there very much, is there acceptance of Muslims in that part of South Carolina? People often think of the South as a bit resistant to change, to people who come in who are different.
Yeah, I think, you know, you got all sorts of people. And there are some people that are very intolerant in the South, not just to Muslims, but to minorities in general. And that's not uncommon, but there are a lot of people who are very open-minded also and very accepting of people of different backgrounds and faiths. So
as well. Well, the Midwest is not known for its openness particularly either. I recently heard a visiting scholar, James Lowen, speak at Unit 1 in Allen Hall about his book Sundown Towns. Towns where people of color throughout the U.S. had to be out of town by sundown. There were no people of color who were allowed to live in those towns, have residence there from about, I guess the peak was from 1890 up into the 1920s and 30s, and some lasted even in the 40s and 50s and 60s, sadly. But Illinois had 500 sundown towns at one time or other. Some of them were suburbs of big cities, others were small towns, but it's a pretty sad thing to think about. Of course, other countries can be narrow, too. How did you find Fatima, since you came here from college in Egypt? Was there more acceptance of people who were different in Egypt than here?
I went to pretty diverse school. I mean, I met people from countries that I didn't even know about. Like, I had a friend from a little country called Mauritius.
Sure.
She looked Indo-Pak, you know, Indian Pakistani, but she's saying, no, we're not. We're, you know, it's off of Africa. So I met people from everywhere there. And people there, you know, everyone there has their own taste and their culture, their background. And it's pretty interesting to be in an environment like that. Generally, most of my friends, Muslims, were fasting. There were people, a lot of people that weren't fasting, so the restaurants, you know, they were still on campus, they were still working. They opened extended hours because they would usually close at 5, but then they kept open for sunset, you know, for when we break our fast. That was really nice of them. And our campus is a very small campus, but it was alive all the time in Ramadan, except maybe for like an hour during, you know, breakfast, because people went to find a place to eat.
And before sunrise.
Yeah, before sunset.
Oh. Yeah. Now, when in Egypt, is there much toleration of people of other faiths, such as Jews or Christians?
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of Christian friends there. I think I had a lot of Egyptian Christian friends, more Egyptian Christian friends there than I have here.
Really?
Interesting. Huh. I met, you know, people from Catholics and Orthodox, and haven't met any Jews. I probably have, but, it wasn't what they identified themselves as. And, yeah, I'd say there was a lot of diversity there.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with two folks from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center about the practices of Ramadan, and we'll be getting into more details about fasting. But if listeners have questions, do give us a call. As you can tell, I have a bit of a cold today, so I'm eager to have other people ask questions, although I'll do my best. But do give us a call, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet. If you're in the continental U.S., call 1-800-222-9455. If you're on a cell phone, just tell our engineer who answers the phone that you're on a cell, and he'll try to get to you very quickly. Let me give those numbers again. Anywhere the program is heard, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. And I see we have a call already on line number one. Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say thanks to your guests for showing up and answering these questions. It's a very interesting topic for many of us. I had a question about Ramadan. I was curious if there was any difference in the way the Sunnis and the Shiites went through Ramadan, if there's any kind of a basic rule everybody follows, or if there are some aspects of the fast that are different depending on which sect you belong to. So I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
I'm not aware of any major differences. The only difference I'm aware of, and it's not really a big deal, and that's because a friend of mine told me, she was a Shia Muslim, she said that, we start breaking fast as soon as sunset kind of begins. So there's a little bit of light left in the sky, you know, when you break your fast. But the Shias, they wait until the sun completely disappears.
Oh, really?
That's the only difference I'm aware of, and it's not really a big deal because the difference is about 5-7 minutes.
Huh.
So,
but who's counting?
Yeah. We're just watching the food.
I went to a very nice breaking of the fast week before last, a fast-a-thon that some folks from CIMIC had organized for people from different faiths who fast, came and talked at table about their practices. And I was honored to be able to have been invited to speak from a Christian perspective, and there were people there from a Muslim perspective who talked about fasting for Ramadan. But it was interesting that the experience is often similar, even across religious boundaries. And I was surprised to hear so many people at my table, at least, say at first there wasn't much sense of spirituality. It was mainly you were just sort of focused on what your body, how it was reacting and how you were feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't much of a sense of prayer. It was sort of you had to kind of force yourself to think of the poor, to think of people who were hungry without choosing to be, and those kinds of things. Was that your experience when you first began fasting?
You mean when I first began fasting this year?
Either way.
Well, usually, for me personally, it takes a couple of days for me to first have to get acclimated to the not eating and drinking part, and that usually doesn't take a long time, but I think, you become, as Ramadan progresses, or even as the day progresses, you actually become, I think, more spiritually aware, something that you try to make a conscious effort to focus on. And for us as Muslims, I think that the eating and drinking part, or not eating and drinking, rather, is probably the easiest aspect of the whole fasting experience, because there's a whole lot of other things that goes along with it. For example, you know, we're in a state of heightened spirituality. There's different aspects like prayer. You know, in addition to our daily prayers, we actually pray some extra prayers. There's something we call dhikr, which is the remembrance of God. And that's something that we engage in through the day. So, you know, we have what we call God consciousness or taqwa. In addition, we also have, we make supplication to God. So it's a time where we actually build our relationship with God, you know, let our bond with God become stronger. So it's actually something that we look forward to. And, you know, God in the Quran tells us that, you know, when my servants, he's talking to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in this verse in the second chapter of the Quran. And he says that when my servants ask you about me, tell them that I am indeed close to them, and I listen to the call of every suppliant when he calls on me. Therefore, then he should respond to me and put their trust in me so that I may be rightly guided. And this is mentioned among the verses, you know, that are talking about the month of Ramadan and the whole fasting ritual. So,
Thank you. I want to get back to some more parts of that, but we do have a couple of callers waiting. Let's go to our toll-free line, number four, line four. Yes, you're on the air. Line four.
Yes, I have a question about the practice of fasting. If you could address how it's done if you're diabetic. Thank you.
Are there special rules for people who have a disease like diabetes, where they need to have a certain amount of carbohydrates, sugar in their system at all times?
In general, like, you have to check with your doctor. It's kind of those things that you have to check with your doctor. And if your doctor feels that it's appropriate for you to fast, because you're really just fasting a few hours a day from sunrise to sunset. It happens to be about 14 hours right now. It varies from, you know, depending on when Ramadan comes. So if your doctor sees that that's not a problem, I have a lot of diabetic people in my family, and they're able to fast. And in fact, it's even better for them. It's healthier for them because they're cutting down on a lot of things that they shouldn't be eating in the first place. Otherwise, if you are, you know, health-wise, you're unable to do it, then you don't do it. You know? If it's been determined by your doctor that you are not, you can't fast, then you don't do it. As an alternative to that would be that you actually feed a fasting person. So let's say I'm not going to fast today because I'm unable to. Then the way I make up for that is that I find any person who's fasting, give them enough money to go feed themselves, or invite them over and have them, you know, eat in my house.
Have them break the fast at your house.
Yeah.
How interesting. And we have another caller on line number one. Yes.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
I have a different kind of question that you may not be able to answer. Given that Ramadan is such a special time, such a holy time, can it be explained all of the killing that's taking place specifically during Ramadan, of Muslims killing Muslims? Can that be explained at all?
Actually, it can't be explained even outside of Ramadan. I mean, there's no excuse for anyone to kill another person. Even if you completely differ in opinion about, you know, completely everything, there's no excuse for people to kill other people. And the fact that it's happening in Ramadan, it makes it even sadder, yeah. You know. So I really, you know, I feel bad about it happening any time, but especially during a holy month like Ramadan.
Does the Quran forbid killing?
Yes, in general, killing people, innocent people, killing in general is not something that, you know, is a good thing in any way. But in particular, in the holy month, and there are in fact four holy months in the lunar calendar. They are the month that people are getting ready to travel, let's say, to do the pilgrimage or come back from the pilgrimage. So these months are considered holy month, and you're not supposed to kill anyone in them.
Yeah, I should say, also add that as Muslims, like any other human being, you know, we very much fall short of our ideals and, you know, what God has ordained for us, you know. We believe that our religion is something that has been ordained from God, and He is the one that's guiding us. But one of the problems is, you know, we can be susceptible to temptations and, you know, all sorts of vices. So we're not any different from any other person of any other belief. But one of the purposes of Ramadan is that, you know, it's a chance for us to re-energize ourselves and to renew our, I guess you can say, vows to God, you know, what we're supposed, and part of the whole ritual of fasting involves, you know, being at our best behavior. And, I mean, you know, the killing aside, I mean, we shouldn't even, you know, engage in bad speech or bad behavior, lying, backbiting, or even becoming angry. I mean, the Prophet tells us that, you know, if somebody annoys you or frustrates you, you shouldn't, you know, raise your voice or escalate it into, you know, something, you know, or avoid angry reactions.
Caller, did you want to follow up?
No, leave answer.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Let me just, we have another caller waiting, but let me just follow up a little bit on this since it's such a pertinent question. For Jews who have the Ten Commandments, one of them is thou shalt not murder. Christians have those Ten Commandments and also have Jesus saying, blessed are the peacemakers. If one strikes you on one cheek, turn the other cheek, and so forth on the Sermon on the Mount. Does the Quran have those kind of teachings? Where, like, is there an exception? Can there be war for both Christians and Jews? There's often been the permission to have war in certain special cases.
I mean, in general, like being forgiving is something that's very, you know, encouraged in Islam. And one of the names of Allah is the Forgiver. And in our daily lives, we're supposed to kind of live up to the names of God because He's created a little bit of these, you know, characteristics in every human. So one of God's names is the Living and the Loving. And so we're supposed to be loving too, the Forgiver. And we're supposed to be a little bit forgiving too. As much as possible, we should be forgiving of other people. But we don't really have the concept of turning the other cheek. You know, there's certain things in Islam that are considered the protectorates, the things that you're supposed to protect. And if anyone approaches those things, and they are five to be exact, if anyone approaches these things and tries to, you know, kind of mess with the protection of these things, then you are supposed to defend yourself. One of them being the human life. So if somebody's going around killing people, then this person should be killed because he is transgressing and trying to overstep these five protected things. Another one being, you know, so yourself, your mind, you protect your mind, you protect your wealth, not so much because you're materialistic, but it's because something that is in your hand that you are responsible for, your family. And I can't think of the fifth one, Shaquille.
Maybe one of our listeners will.
I think the fifth one may be your right to practice your faith.
Mm-hmm.
I think is one of them.
We have a caller patiently waiting on line number two. Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'll ask my question and then hang up and listen. I hope I didn't miss it, but I'm unfamiliar with what Ramadan actually is. And I guess, that's all I need to know. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Let's do start at the very beginning for a little bit. How long is the Ramadan fast? How many days?
So it's a month. And a lunar month. And a lunar month is either 29 or 30 days. And the difference between a lunar month and a solar month is that it depends on the sighting of the moon. So every month begins when you see the crescent of the moon. And it finishes when the month after it starts. And that begins with, you know, the sighting of the moon. So it's only 29 or 30 days. And it's just a month like any other month. You know?
And Muslims fast from sunrise to sunset, and they don't eat any food or any water if they follow the instructions completely. And they have prescribed prayers as part of that. But what is Ramadan, remembering something? Is it celebrating something?
Well, I think, I think for me personally, it kind of makes you, forces you to shift your attention from, like, from associating hunger with just hunger, you know, to associating hunger with other things. Like, the reason you're hungry, normally when you're hungry, you'll go find a nice place to eat or something. But now, when you're hungry, you're remembering that I'm not going to go eat because I am doing this because God knows that I'm fasting, and only God knows that I'm fasting. And also associating it with things, with other things, like, you know, if I'm hungry now, I won't be hungry in a few hours when I have my dinner. Other people don't have that luxury. But the month itself was the month when the Quran was revealed to the, it was one of the months when the Quran was revealed to the Prophet. And before the year he died, so it was revealed by Angel Gabriel. We believe he's the messenger angel, so he's the one that communicates between God and his messengers. And the year the Prophet died, Angel Gabriel read the Quran in full, in order, in the order that we have today, three times to the Prophet. So it's an exceptionally special month.
Fatima, you said earlier you're in graduate school. What are you studying?
Microbiology.
A wonderful... wonderful things to study. That's what my wife
yes.
what my wife does.
Mm-hmm.
We have another caller waiting again on line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Hello?
Yes.
Yes, go right ahead.
Earlier in the program, you referred to 500 cities in Illinois that were cities of more or less intolerance. Is that correct?
Or you sundown towns, yeah. The research was done by Professor James Lowen of the University of Vermont, but he grew up in Decatur, Illinois, and so he was particularly interested to find so many in Illinois. He was just quite shocked. So many towns that where people of color were forced to leave by sundown each day if they were there working during the day.
Okay. Do you feel this is true of East Central Illinois or the University of Illinois community where we are now?
Well, I think the Champaign-Urbana community has some pockets of tolerance, but we also have a history here of, I remember when I was in high school here, there was only one African-American teacher in Urbana High School, Taylor Thomas. He taught history. Wonderful teacher, wonderful man. But I know he and his wife Mary were not allowed to move into the part of Urbana where I lived. They tried to buy a home there and weren't able to and had to buy a home outside of the city. Now, that was, you know, back in the 1950s, but I'm an old guy, so that was during my lifetime.
Okay, would it be safe to assume that progress has been made in the ensuing years?
I certainly hope so. I've seen some signs of it, but I hear from my African-American friends that there's are still difficulties.
Okay. Thank you for your candor.
Sure. Do either of you have comments?
Well, there was something that's been in the news now. I mean, it's not a big deal, but it's been kind of blown up by the news, by the media. And that is an incident that happened in one of the suburbs of Chicago. I think it was Oak Lawn or something like that, where one of the parents of a student, apparently 50% of the students in the school there are Muslims, and one of the parents wanted the school to be decorated for Ramadan, which is a month. And she, in the previous years, she has decorated for Ramadan and Christmas and Halloween. She wanted the school to be decorated for Ramadan this year, too. And this has, like, stirred problems with the parents because they were concerned that that implied that, you know, just to be not to be offensive to the Muslims, we might not have to celebrate. Well, what happened is that the school decided that they, you know, in the spirit of not kind of remaining secular, that they wouldn't bring up religion at all, and they were kind of implying that that would mean taking away Christmas decorations too, and the parents got upset about that. But just yesterday, it's been solved. The school agreed to put up decorations for Ramadan just like it does for Christmas and Halloween. It was a nice outcome.
There's one religious scholar who had a book that came out about 10 years ago that said that America has gone from a Protestant Christian majority to a sort of a practice of non-religion, complete secularism. Mm-hmm. We could maybe talk about that in a minute, but we do have another caller on line number two. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
I just wanted to respond to that last comment about going from a religious culture to non-secular one, because I've been in this for a long time, 31 years exactly. And I've seen that happen in my lifetime. because this whole culture was at one time very, very spiritual. But I'm not giving up. That's a comment as an observer, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have you found that, particularly since you're studying science, Fatima, that that there's a bias against religions of any kind at a university?
I haven't felt any of it, and I think the opposite is true. I know for my parents in particular, coming to America was a big step towards them learning about Islam and beginning to practice Islam. When they lived back in Egypt, it was kind of difficult. There was a lot of turmoil. Muslims were not treated very well. And when they came here, this is what happens in America to a lot of people when they come here. It's an open environment. You have lots of resources available for you. Then you're kind of curious and you start to research and to learn. And it's only in this environment where you can actually learn and where you can actually practice what you believe in. So I haven't noticed anything on campus.
Shaquille?
Well, I think that there are some people that I've ran into in the community that, you know, they seem to be at odds, you know, or they're trying to reconcile science and religion and that sort of thing. And I don't know why it's such a difficult thing. I mean, it's somewhat boggles my mind, because I think the world is one, and from the perspective of my faith, I think that, you know, God encourages us to explore. He encourages us to know our world and be at one and be at peace with our world, and, you know, live and coexist with the world around us. So, you know, I do find that there seems to be a rift in this country that's been happening in the last couple of years, especially, I think, with the political situation. A lot of the politicians seem to be feeding into that, and so I hope that that situation changes.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith, and we are about halfway through our program, are two folks from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center. Fatima Hermes is a microbiology graduate student here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. We also have a software engineer, a graduate of the University of South Carolina, Shaquille Mustafa, and we're happy to have both of them on the air. Let me repeat the telephone numbers, because I'm eager to have people call with questions. We're talking about Ramadan mainly, but also other questions that have to do with Islam. These folks will, I'm sure, be happy to answer. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for the program, and you can reach the studio by dialing 1-800-222-9455, and just tell Brett Polson, who answers the phone, our technical engineer, if you're on a cell phone, and he'll let me know, and we'll get to that call quickly. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-9455. When I'm not doing this radio program, I'm the director of the University YMCA, and the Y helps provide support for this program. Coming up at the Y this week, we have a speaker on our Know Your University series, Tuesday at noon, from the Department of Journalism. Nancy Benson will be talking about China beyond the Great Wall. Some of her students have been making a radio documentary of that title. The 10 students from U of I traveled with Professor Benson to China, and we'll be hearing about that Tuesday noon at the Y. Come and have lunch at the Thai Eatery, great Thai food. Or you can bring your lunch or simply come to the free lecture. On Friday, the Friday Forum speaker this week is the president of Citizens for Solutions in Chicago, Evan Freund. He'll be talking about the responsibility to protect doctrine that was proposed originally by Canada, the Canadian government, to the international community. Kofi Annan from the UN was one of the sponsors of this. And it justifies intervention of international bodies in times of humanitarian crises around the world. So it'll be very interesting to hear about that doctrine, international doctrine. Friday at noon at the University Y, that's 1001 South Wright Street. We're easily accessible by bus. We must have 40 or 50 buses that come by every hour. Just get off at the University Library, stop and walk half a block to the Y. And there are often parking spaces that also open up around noon on Fridays. Well, those are some of the programs coming up at the University YMCA, coming up here on Focus 580 this week. On Tuesday at 11, you might be interested in a program on anti-Semitism in Poland after Auschwitz. Jan Gross, who's a Millercom speaker on campus, will be talking with David Inge. Focus 580 here on WILL AM at 11 o'clock on Tuesday. Well, we have a couple callers waiting. Let's go to line number 4. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes. Hi. I just wanted to ask. My name is Blake. I'm from Tyler, Texas. And I think there's a lot of misperception about the comment that the lady had made that the Islam is really, truly, indeed a religion of peace. I'd like to cite in the Quran, in the book of Surah, you know, several times over does it mention that passages like they're not allowed to make the Jewish people and the Christians their friends, and if anybody in their faith should do that or make a conversion to Christianity, that the Quran directs them to be put to death. And there's just a kind of a parade of contradictions of what we have as our Bill of Rights in America versus what's in Islamic law. And I'd just like to know her perspective. Does she really believe that Islamic law lines up with our law? And where it doesn't, which one, being here in America, is she going to, you know, remain faithful to?
Fatima?
I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I think there's misuse of terminology, because I don't think there's anything called Islamic law. I don't know what you're trying to say really by Islamic law, but I don't personally believe that there is something called Islamic law. I think there's something called the Islamic teaching, and I don't believe that any country in the world is adhering to what it itself refers to as Islamic law. But I mean, I don't want to go into the details about the verses that you refer to. There's some of them that are not accurate that you mentioned, but I really do think that Islam is a religion of peace. And like I was saying, it doesn't mean that you turn the other cheek. If you do have to defend yourself, you defend yourself. And I said earlier in the show that I have a lot of Christian friends, and I believe that I'm a practicing Muslim. I would not allow anyone to say that I'm not a practicing Muslim because I have Christian friends.
Well, the history of Muhammad doesn't show somebody who is there to defend themselves. Muhammad was very aggressive from Mecca and Medina to convert people to his way of thinking. Now, he seems to have been enchanted by a spiritual force, at which even times in his life, he missed it possibly being bad jinn, yet his followers had dutifully recorded his chantings, and whether you would call them law or directives or practices, they imply action, and some of the actions is not very good at all in the Christian context, and I'm concerned that too much observance towards the laws or the commandments that are dictated in the Quran is only going to hurt the people that are practicing that religion and other religions.
I don't know how much of the Quran you've read, and maybe you can get yourself a translation and read it, but there is a one verse in particular which I'm going to mention, which says that, and of course it's very acceptable for people of mixed, you know, background to be living together, but this particular verse says that you have your own way of life, and I have my own way of life, and I can't convert you, you can't convert me. And I would refer you to that chapter. It's a very short chapter. It's near the end of the Quran. It's called Al-Kafirun. What is it called, Shakir?
Yeah, you were right. It was Al-Kafirun.
Okay. It's a very short chapter at the end of the Quran, and the verse says that you have your own way of life, I have my own way of life.
Yeah, and,
there's another verse that says that. There's another verse that's...
A lot of people contend that way, but in Surah chapter 5, God... Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay, excuse me. It makes statements such as, infidels are those who say God is one of three in a trinity.
That's a translation. You have to accept that that's a translation.
Well,
the Arabic verse does not say infidels.
Make war on infidels. When you meet them in the battlefield, strike their heads off.
If I could say something to the caller, you know, we can go verse by verse and discuss these things, but I would really encourage the caller to get to know Muslims, you know, get to know somebody who is of the faith. And we, you know, I'm sure, you know, if you have any Muslim friends or if you'd like to make any Muslim friends, you know, you're welcome to come and visit the Islamic Center here in Champaign. And we can discuss all of those things. I mean, you do bring up a lot of relevant questions, and these are things that should be addressed. But at the same time, you have to come with an open mind and, you know, be able to contextualize what it is that you're hearing and what it is that you're seeing. I mean, there is, in the time of the Prophet, peace be upon him, you know, there is an extensive body of work, and it has to be analyzed thoroughly and not just taken out of context. And if you can approach, and I would say, you know, when you study any religion, be it, you know, Islam, Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, you know, you have to approach it with an open mind, and you have to contextualize it and understand it in the context of the time in which, you know, these sorts of scriptures were revealed. So, you know, I really encourage you to come and, you know, come to the Islamic Center. We're located in 106 Lincoln Avenue, and we'd be happy to discuss with you a lot of the questions that you have. And you will find that, you know, Islam is not just, you know, a religion of peace, but it is a religion of justice, and in order for peace to happen, you know, the prerequisite is justice. So you have to understand things in that context, I would say.
My misunderstanding isn't with what it's saying. I don't think the people that are practicing Islam really recognize the violence that's incorporated into their doctrine, and they just either overlook it or the ones that, you know, want to practice it in infitadas and jihads, they go ahead and reference that just to justify their actions against other people. Christ never commanded us to strike out against our fellows. He made us that we were to be a helper to the unbelievers and help them with their come to Christ, or, you know, and know, have a knowledge of God.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you for your comments. I think you've made your point. Let me just say Christian that unfortunately in Christian tradition there's a great history of violence as well, and that in the Christian scriptures there's the whole book of Joshua, for example, and Revelation, where there's a lot of violence, and even in the Psalms, as much as there's wonderful Psalms of peace like the 23rd, there are also Psalms that have a lot of violence in them, like 139. And since our caller mentioned Jesus, although Jesus did talk about peace on the Sermon on the Mount, he's also reported to, in the Gospels, to have picked up a whip and driven people out of the temple when he was angry. So I'm afraid there's a lot of violence in a number of religions, but we have several other callers waiting, so let's do go to another one. I think we are at line number 2. Yes, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to pick... essentially, you said what I was thinking, that the Old Testament, and this particular, is full of violence and, you know, really dastardly deeds being done to people. And, you know, and right, there are some in the New Testament as well. So I'm just, you know, wanting to say that we, you know, can pick out all kinds of texts, I'm sure, from many different sources and miss the larger issue, which is that of peace and love. So that's my comment. Thank you for your program.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call. And we have another caller again on line number 1. Yes.
Hi, I'm Daniel Brown. I'm from Champaign, Illinois. I just wanted to say to the caller from Texas that I think there is a lot of violence in a lot of different religious scriptures. I've heard other callers talking about it too, but Jesus himself said he's not here to, he's here to divide. He's quoted as saying that he's not here to help people bring together, but to divide them. I'm not sure where that is, but I mean,
I come not to bring peace, but a sword.
But a sword.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a there's a lot of violence in a lot of different religions, and it's not, I don't think, to be taken at face value. I mean, it's not supposed to be taken fundamentally like exactly how it says. I think you really have to look at what you think the main message is and just take out of it what's the good from what's in there and know that really it's about God and a relationship with him and a relationship with Jesus, and maybe go to some Bible study groups and study that type of stuff. And, you know, I'm sure they have Quran groups where they look into problems with what they see with the Quran or whatever. So, yeah, I think that, you know, wherever you look, there's going to be violence in religious scriptures, and you can't judge one just because there is violence. And I really liked what the Muslim lady on the show said about, you know, meet some Muslim people, see if they really are violent. And really it's just about real life and relationships. It's not about what a book says and what law you follow or whatever. I mean, really, we're all just supposed to be peaceful. That's what the Bible says. And I don't think we should be condemning other people because of their religion. They could have a completely different relationship with God than you. So that's what I think about that.
Thank you very much for your call and your comments. Where can people go who are curious about the Quran and about Islamic teaching to get a full story, to get the central story, not what the extremists might be saying on either end, but how can people learn?
I would say the easiest way is to get to know a Muslim, or, you know, that obviously it goes for any faith. You know, if you want to learn about a faith, if you want to learn about a culture, you go to a practitioner of that faith or culture. So in here locally, you know, we have a mosque, and it's a very open place, I would say. It's open pretty much any time. Anybody's welcome to walk in. We encourage people to take the time, even during Ramadan. We have what we call the iftar, which is the breakfast, yeah, breaking of the fast, the dinner that we use to break the fast. And so we have those pretty much every evening. We encourage people to come by. It's 106 South Lincoln Avenue, and Fatima can give us the email address.
And if you would like to set up an appointment beforehand, you can email dpc@simic.org.
So repeat that web address, please.
DPC. That's letter D, letter C, letter P, at simic.org.
I'm sorry, I'm a little hard of hearing. Is that D as in David?
Yes.
V?
No,
as
P.
P as in Paul. C D, as in Charlie.
Okay, DPC.
At simic.
C-I-M-I-C.
Yeah, dot org.
Dot org is an email address. Great.
Mm-hmm.
So people,
and also, I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but there's also every Saturday, except for the next Saturday, this coming Saturday, every Saturday there is an information booth for the mosque at the farmer's market in Lincoln Square.
So for a little bit later in the fall, until the farmer's market quits, there's an information booth with volunteers from the mosque on Saturday mornings at Lincoln Square. Great. We have a couple other callers waiting. Let's go to line number. I'm not so sure. Hello.
Are you still taking calls?
Yes, I am. Let's go right ahead. Line number one.
I'm on the air.
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
I don't mean to pile on, but I'm very, very curious. When this topic of violence has come up, I'd comment in an overarching way that it seems clear from these few calls we've had today that the interpretation or misinterpretation of the scriptures is very much upon the minds of open-minded Americans to understand. And so to back off to the earlier comments, I didn't hear a categorical denial of the validity of violence, and that's fine. That's fine. I heard that there are exceptions. So I want to bring one example that's particularly troubling to me and somewhat removed from what's going on exactly today, to two examples. Can you comment on, from your perspective of the Quran, as to the validity of the fatwa against Salman Rushdie and the activities that have happened in Scandinavia regarding those cartoons and the like? If the Quran instructs that it sometimes it's all right to kill, does it also instruct that sometimes it's okay to laugh? And I'll take my answer off the air. I'm openly curious. Bye-bye.
Thanks. So the two questions about, since there are exceptions in Islam as well as in Christianity and Judaism for violence, in some cases it's deemed appropriate. What about the fatwa against the writer Salman Rushdie, because of some of his novels, which some Islamic leaders took exception to and thought were insulting to the Prophet?
I personally feel that, and I'm not somebody who's in a position to give a fatwa, and I would say a lot of the people who do give fatwas are not also, but as far as I'm concerned, I don't really agree with it, and I think a lot of Muslims would feel the same way, and I can understand people being outraged and offended. He cited... The caller cited the cartoon incident, and I think
the Denmark cartoon incident
last year, and I think that Muslims were offended, and justifiably so, but that does not give them the right to go and commit violence, respond with violence. I mean, that's not what our religion teaches us, and so I would categorically denounce those sorts of actions.
Fatima, what is your response?
I agree with Shaquille, and if you look at the way the Muslim community here responded, because the cartoons were republished
in the Daily Lineup, the newspaper and here at the University of Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't respond in any violent way. We were very civilized about it, and
you wrote
that
letters.
And initially that was the way the Muslims in Denmark reacted too. It was only when the story was told to other countries that the Muslims there overreacted, and it might have not been told as accurately as we know it, or as it happened. But I agree with Shaquille. I mean, I know, violence is a very, nothing justifies violence, but self-defense is, I think, necessary. And there is something called being forgiving and being generous. Part of being generous is to forgive someone. And I truly believe in these concepts. They should be applied as much as possible.
Yeah, and I'd like to add also that a lot of the violence that comes out of religion or in the name of religion actually has other underlying reasons too, you know, and there's a lot of socioeconomic conditions that create these sorts of things, and religion becomes a tool for those people who want to exploit it and use it for their aims. And so you see it happen not just in Islam, but you see it happen in many other religions. When you talk about suicide bombings and things like that, you know, most of suicide bombings, I don't know if people are aware, are actually committed by people who aren't Muslims. You know, they're happening in places like Sri Lanka. So, you know, that it's not something that's unique to Islam, but unfortunately that's what's out there in the media. And I encourage people to just, you know, get to know people, you know, look beyond what the headlines or what the sound bites are telling you, and, you know, try to get to know people for who they are. And, you know, I think that you'll be pleasantly surprised.
We're down to our last 2 minutes. Let's sneak in one last question. Line number one, go ahead.
Hi, I was the one who started that last thread. I wasn't trying to solicit your personal views, because I'm sure from everything I've heard that you don't condone violence and so forth. I was interested to know if you could comment, let's say, on the pertinent portions of the Quran which apparently can be so readily misinterpreted. as an overarching statement, it seems to me that when the Christians engage in killing, it's because they ignore their religious precepts. But I've almost come to the from media representations of portions of the Quran, I've almost come to realize, or believe anyway, that when Muslims do certain kinds of violence, it's not because they're ignoring the precepts, but in fact because they're following them.
All right, let's stop right there and give our guests 1 minute to answer. Are you following the precepts of the Quran? Are Muslims when they commit violence? Or does the Quran as a whole preach against violence?
Well, there's as Muslims, we believe that anybody who kills one person, you know, it's as if you killed the whole of humanity. And so, you know, there are, you know, the Quran does not teach us to go out and kill people. As Fatima has already mentioned, you know, there is the element of self-defense, and I think that exists in pretty much every culture, every religion.
Every civil law, too, and civil law.
And civil law, yeah. And so I don't think that, you know, the Quran is the source of all this. I think it's the people's understanding, and it's the conditions that people are subjected to. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, if I was in that situation, I wouldn't do the same thing, because, you know, I don't know. You know, you got to, you know, be in their situation, walk a mile in their shoes and see what they're subjected to. And, you know, sometimes when you are subjected to degrading situations, you know, as a lot of people in the world are, be they Muslims, Christians, Jews, whatever religion, you know, you're going to react in extreme ways. And our Prophet, he warned us against extremes, you know, but, you know, obviously we're all human beings and we can be subjected to, you know, and we're all subjected to the same type of things. And so, you know, we can all fall prey to the same sort of reactions and overreactions.
And I was just going to say that I did mention that the life, the self, is something that is a protectorate of God. So even if you take that away, you're trespassing the protectorates of God, even if it's your own self. You're not even supposed to kill yourself in Islam. Suicide is also something that's forbidden in Islam. So, I mean, taking it on to someone else, killing someone else, is even greater. So you have to be really careful if you're going to kill someone. And the Prophet says that if two people meet and one of them kills the other, then one of them is in hellfire. And you don't want to be the one that ends it, whether you're the one that's being killed or the one that's killing.
Well, thank you very much. We're at the end of our time. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for Keeping the Faith. We've been talking today with two guests from CIMIC, the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, Fatima Hermes and Shakil Mustafa. Thank you very much for being our guests. Coming up this week at the University of Hawaii on Tuesday, Nancy Benson talking about journalism students in China. Coming up Friday at noon, Evan Freund talking about the UN doctrine of the responsibility to protect in times of humanitarian crisis. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith. Next week, our guest will be Gail Summerfield, Director of the Women and Gender in Global Perspectives Department at the University of Illinois. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
No matter when it hits you, all of a sudden, getting older isn't just about other people. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, some people who've chosen to face the rest of their lives in unusual ways. From getting a Mayo Clinic executive physical to rediscovering the joys of practicing the guitar. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7, here on WILL Urbana.
I'm Todd Gleason, host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. WillPledge.org. You know you wanna.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 60s and light south winds. Tomorrow, mostly sunny in the morning, then partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. Record high temperature possible in the lower 90s with southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening, cooler with a low in the upper 50s.
Support for WILL comes in part from the Presbyterian Churches of Illinois and Indiana, celebrating the Bring Hope campaign worldwide and in your community. Information online at bringhopeworldwide.org.
This is WILL Urbana, listener-supported public radio. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.